Well, welcome to the Everyday Discernment Podcast. This is episode 9 of season 2. As always, we are a member of the Charisma Podcast Network and the Edify Podcast Network. Last week was an awesome episode with Michael Moore, aka Honest Youth Pastor, on Instagram. We talked about a lot of things in the church, including progressive Christianity and the problem of biblical illiteracy. This podcast is designed to help you personally grow in your walk with God. That is my goal, to give glory and honor to God. And my hope is that at the end of every episode, you find something practical that you can apply to your life and to your walk with Jesus. My book by the same name as this podcast, Everyday Discernment, is available on Amazon, so check that out. Also, as you grow in discernment and make decisions that honor God, I would love to hear stories about how you heard from God and how you made a decision, and whether that was good or bad, just let me know. You can email me always at discerningdad@outlook.com. And for today's episode, I'm extremely excited to share this interview with Michael Jr. with you. This is unlike any other interview I've done in the fact that it has kept me on my toes during the process of talking to him. And you probably heard me awkwardly trying to volley back some of his jokes and sometimes fail miserably doing so. But it was a fun conversation. I really hope you enjoy it. And we're going to get to it right now.
Welcome to the Everyday Discernment Podcast. This show is about you and your walk with Jesus as we grow in discernment together so that we can make better daily decisions that honor God in all we do. We will align all things against the Bible and give you practical steps to run your Christian race to win. And now your host, the discerning dad, Tim Ferrara.
Well, welcome to the Everyday Discernment Podcast. My guest today is Michael Jr. He is a comedian, an actor, and a podcast host, and now an author. His Laugh Out Loud stand-up shows, paired with his remarkable humility and candor, landed him appearances on The Tonight Show, The Late Late Show, Jimmy Kimmel Live, BET's Comic View, and more. He's a touring comedian who uses comedy to inspire his audiences to find their purpose and live a life fulfilled. Michael Jr.'s debut book, Funny How Life Works, is out now and shares pivotal, often hilarious stories from his life. Michael, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am great. Did you say remarkable humility?
Yes, that's what I was. That's what I was given. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. I don't know where that came from. Remarkable humility.
Yeah.
First of all, to even write that sounds very unhumility.
Right.
Humble. And then to call it remarkable. Wow.
It's remarkable.
Amazing. Whoever.
Hey, just own it.
I don't know how to do that. I should just walk around crying or something.
It's awesome. Yeah, so let's talk about this humility you have. How did you get so humble?
Well, I don't know, man. It's just, you got the wrong guess.
I'm not okay. Well, we'll start over. I'm just kidding. So tell us more about you. Cool. Anything, you know, that bio is pretty awesome. But who is Michael? How did you get to this point in your life? And tell us anything else you'd like our listeners to know about you.
Oh, how did I get to the point of doing a podcast?
Well, yeah, right now. This is the pinnacle in your life. So
I turned on this computer and then you were just on there. And I was like, weird. I was like, who is this dude?
Oh, yeah.
I do comedy, which is awesome, but I'm really called to comedically inspire people to walk in purpose. So I'll do any. So whenever I'm on stage, that's kind of what you'll get. I mean, we'll laugh for sure. I mean, unless you just in a bad place or you just don't find me funny, that's fine too. But we will laugh, we'll have fun, but there's always something a little more, because laughter is really just the vehicle. It's not necessarily the destination.
Yeah.
So that's how I like to get down wherever I go, whatever I'm doing.
Cool. Where'd you grow up? Well, what were your influences in being a Christian, and how did you kind of find Christ and get to the, being a comedian? How did that all start?
Okay, cool. That's like 7 questions.
Man. Yeah.
Which one? I'm not going to remember all 7 of them. I'll go with the one, how did I find Christ? It's the same way for Black people. Like, you got to believe in your heart and confess in your mouth. So it's the same for
okay.
Black people.
Yeah. Good to know.
Just so you know. In case you ever wake up Black and you're like, oh, snap, how do I do this? And then you'll know. Like, oh, right. That's how I do it. So yeah, it's pretty dope. I'm going to take a sip of coffee.
Yeah.
Cool. I forgot the other 6 questions. What were
they? No, it's fine. Influences in your life growing up, you know, when did you realize like, hey, I can do this comedian thing? I know your journey kind of started with a God inspired moments along the road, you know, with an awesome opportunity. I was listening to some of that, but you know, when did you kind of just say, hey, I'm pretty funny. Let's try this comedic stand up thing. And how did that process go?
Oh, it was 1982, September 8th. just asked me when. I told you the day.
Oh yeah.
That's
okay.
That's when it was.
We got the day now. Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I actually don't even remember the date. I mean, that could be it. No. So I remember when I've known I was funny since I was like 9 years old. Mm-hmm. So I'm 9 years old, and me and my dad and my uncle went to some of my uncle's friend's house. And I'm 9 years old, and I grew up in a household where when grown people are talking, you don't talk. Mm. Like, you just listen.
Yeah.
So we went into their house, and this house was really, really, really a mess. I mean, super dirty. And I grew up in Michigan, and it's like, I don't know, 20 degrees outside or something. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 15 degrees. Like, it's super cold outside. We go into this house, and it is blazing hot. I'm talking about, it must be 94 degrees in this house. And the whole house is dirty. There's clothes all over the place. There's old plates with old food on it. And it's just, I had to use a bathroom, but the toilets didn't work. And it was horrible. And there was probably like 12 people living in this house. It was a big house. And I remember my dad and my uncle just looking disgusted. And I was looking around like, ugh. And we left pretty quickly. And then I'm sitting in the car in the back seat, and I know I can't say anything disrespectful, and I can't necessarily try to say something funny. So what I did was I put it in the form of a question instead. I said to my dad and my uncle, I said, hey, Dad, I didn't know you could have flies in January. And they both fell out laughing because flies can't exist in 15 degree weather. And they both just start cracking up laughing. And I remember sitting in the back seat like, I knew instinctively, I kind of knew that would be funny, but I didn't know for sure until I got some grown folks' response and reaction to that. So at that moment, 2 days later is when I started doing stand-up and got on the Tonight Show. That last part is not true at all.
2 days later. Wow. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. It's just 2 days later, man.
I'll fact check that
Jay
later.
Leno, so. Jay Leno heard about it and he was like, yo, we got to have you on the show. I was like, I got soccer tomorrow. I can't really. So I waited a few years and ended it.
That's smart. Yeah. You don't want to rush into something like that. Mm-hmm. But back in the days when kids were seen and not heard, man, I'm trying to bring that back with my kids. You know, I don't know. Those were the days, right?
Well, yeah, there's so much. I learned a lot. It actually taught me how to watch. Like, if you ever see me in a room, I'm just looking at people. If you ever see me at a party, well, first of all, that's not me because I don't like parties.
Yeah.
It's just too many people. But if it is me for some crazy reason, because I had to be there, I'm in the corner of the room just having a quick, I mean, just watching the place.
Yeah.
And observing only, not really communing with people. Because I'm so, what was it? Amazingly humble? Is that right. What was the word?
Yeah. Something we call like that Facebook stalking today.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I guess I'm on Facebook too. Cool.
So yeah, so you got to this point where, you know, doors opened up and you were on the Tonight Show and a bunch of things. And I love the story of it was a stand-up night and you were given the opportunity to kind of go on before a famous comedian. And then he invited you on tour with him, with him and Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh yeah, George Wallace. Yeah.
So, that was kind of a God moment, right? To be able to be in that opportunity to go on tour with them. Tell us about that.
Yeah. It wasn't really a tour. He just asked me to do one event with him. And gotcha. I was living in, I mentioned this in the book, I think it's chapter 28. There's only 25 chapters. But in the book, I mentioned how I was living in New York City. And my address was 1997 Lumina Drive because my car was a 1997 Chevy.
Oh yeah,
Lumina. So I'm living in my car and I do a show at the Comic Strip Live, and this comedian named George Wallace saw me and he thought I was funny and he saw that I was clean. So I didn't know Jesus at this time, and 26 years old, I didn't know Jesus at the time. And then he invites me to do a show with him in New Jersey. And I'm pumped. He said his best friend is going to be there. I was like, man, this is awesome. I didn't know who his best friend was. Of course, I get to the show. It's Jerry Seinfeld. So it's me, George Wallace, Jerry Seinfeld. Yeah. I got two shows, got two standing ovations. I rip. I'm the man. Neither one of them, Jerry or Jordan, neither one of them knew that I was homeless at the time, literally living in my car, because that's not something you can bring up in the great room. Hey, you know, the other day I was sitting in my den, which is the passenger seat of my car. Anyway. So we had a great show. The issue with that whole thing was when I lived in New York, like I said, I was living in my car, but I was rationing. I didn't have enough food. I mean, I had food, but when I moved to New York, I thought that if I get on stage somewhere possibly, which I knew it would be really hard to get on stage, I was thinking that it would be easy. Once I do a show, maybe I'll get enough money, be able to keep my apartment, do all that stuff. But the clubs in New York City actually pay approximately $12 a night on average. Like yeah. Literally, they pay $12 a night. So I quickly ran out of money. And then I had like $6 when I got invited to do the show with George Wallace and Jerry Seinfeld. I had about $6 to my name, which was okay, because on that Friday I was going to do a show, get another $12, $15 from this guy. And then I could keep, like, I was really stuck in New York. Like, I didn't have enough money to go back west. So I was kind of stuck. And then when George Wallace invites me to that show, it was an awesome opportunity. But the issue that I didn't do the math on, and I told him, yes, I would do it, was I never asked him if he was going to pay me or not, because that's not something you do. If you get an opportunity like that, you're going to be like, yo, you paying me? How much I get paid? So I right. never knew if I was going to get paid or not. So so I'm sitting in my car and I'm doing the math. Okay, I got enough for another meatball sub for tomorrow, cut it in half, eat at 9 o'clock. Like, I had everything rationed out. But the math I didn't do was when I leave New York to go to New Jersey, there's an $8 toll to come back to New York City. Mm. So if there's an $8 toll, that means I'll have enough money to get there. But if I don't get paid, I won't have enough money to get back.
Right.
So I just decided to go. I mean, I didn't have any other. I mean, I had another choice. I could have stayed in New York City, but I went, man. And the things that God did on that side of the tunnel was pretty doggone amazing. Like, pretty significant. I get into the details in chapter 28, but it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. So then you were invited to church after that, after he saw that you were clean and a clean comedian. And didn't you go to church because of a girl? How was that that introduction?
Yeah. You jacking this whole story up. I'm just going to throw it out there. Yeah, this is all twisted up. So he didn't invite me to church. What happened was that same night at that club with him and Jerry Seinfeld, I didn't know how I was going to get back to. So I get off stage that night at the Rascals Comedy Club in New Jersey, and nobody is, I'm waiting to get paid. I'm hoping I'm getting paid, but I don't know who to ask or what to do. And then after a while, I'm borderline loitering because everybody's gone. Jerry Seinfeld's gone. George Wallace is gone. Most of the audience members are gone. And it's time for me to get ready to leave. Then the manager of the club walks up to me and he says, and I'm thinking he's about to give me some money because I can tell he's walking right towards me.
Yeah.
And instead of giving me some money, he said, hey, man, would you like to go to church with me tomorrow? Oh. I was like, church? You got some money or something? I ain't going to church. Man, back up. So I was like, nah, I'm okay, man. I ain't going to go to church. So then I went to the bathroom because the one in my apartment didn't exist.
Right.
So I figure I go to the bathroom before I leave. And I don't know where I'm going, meaning I know where my car is, but I don't have enough money to get back to New York City through the tolls. There's no way back into the city for me. I can't get back in. So I'm just going to my car. I don't know what I'm going to do, man. So after I leave the bathroom, this lady approaches me and she said, hey, did you talk to my fiance, which was the owner, which was the manager of the club? And I was like, who is your fiance? Like, she looks amazing. I don't know. Like, she's all beautiful. She's like an angel or something. I never seen an angel before. But
yeah.
And I'm kind of mesmerized by how beautiful she is, but she pales in comparison to my wife now. Like, I was just around a bunch of ugly women later in that part of my life, I guess. Anyway, so she says to me, hey, Michael Jr., would you like to go to church with us? She has some kind of accent too. And I'm thinking, and without even thinking, I said, yes, I would love to. But I wasn't even thinking. Like, I was just saying it because she was all beautiful. I didn't even know pretty people went to church. Gotta be real with you. I thought they was all toe back and just wore out or whatever. So I said, yes. But and then she writes on a napkin the address to the church and the name of it. It's Christian Culture Center in Brooklyn, New York. And I look at the napkin and it has a New York City address. Mm-hmm. And then the reality of my situation comes crashing back down on me. I can't go to church.
Right.
So I leave a club and I'm walking to my car and I don't know. Literally don't know where I'm going, what I'm doing. I'm just going to get in my car and just sit there or whatever. Rational. And it's kind of cold. I mean, it's really cold outside. So I got to figure out gasoline and starting the car up and staying warm. Like, it was just, it was a mess. So I'm walking to my car, man. And the bouncer calls me. which was a dude who wouldn't let me in the club earlier until he found out I was there with George Wallace, for George Wallace. He calls me back and he says, hey, he says, Mike Jr., this is a big dude too. Like, I look up to him and I'm like 6'2".
Yeah.
He said, yo, what's up? He said, man, you had a great set tonight. And he gives me a hand slap, right? And then we embrace, right? But the hand slap, it wasn't as crisp as it normally is.
Yeah.
Because there's some money in his hand. I could feel it, but I don't look at it. So I could feel he's handing me some money. Now I'm thinking, I did two sets. Is it going to be two tens? Because I could feel it's two tens. It's two bills.
Yeah.
Is this going to be 220s? Like, I'm all excited. Like, oh, snap. This is amazing. But I don't look. Instead, I'm starting to get a little emotional. But I'm still hugging this dude. And I'm looking him in his eye. And this is weird at this point. So I'm like, I need to back up. So I keep my hand closed. And I walk to my car. And I'm pumped and excited. I got some money. I even open my hands yet. So I get into the car. And I open the car with my left hand. Because I don't want to open this one yet. So I'm all excited. I get in the car, set my stuff down. And I'm sitting in the driver's seat. And for whatever reason, I open my hands with like one finger at a time. I don't know why.
Suspense.
And I'm opening my hands and I slowly look. And the next sound that I hear is my tears crashing down on $200 bills.
Wow. I'm
blown away. Like, just blown away. And it was really God saying, yo, I got you. So then I look to the passenger seat. And I see the napkin with the address of that church on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to church. And then I went to that church, and that's the church I got saved at.
Wow. That's a crazy story. And that might as well have been $1 million for you back then, because that was everything you needed to get out of the city and more at the time. And so that's a great time of discernment where you just kind of were faithful to just kind of take one step at a time, and God met you where you were. That's amazing.
This podcast is part of the Edify Podcast Network. Edify is a faith-inspiring app that brings together thousands of the best Christian podcasts in one place for your listening enjoyment. Cut through the noise and grow your faith by diving into the world's top Christian podcasts today. Download the Edify app for free from the App Store or Google Play, or by going to edify.app. That's edifi.app.
Okay. What other influences in your life? Like comedian influences that you looked up to, or anyone else that kind of helped you along the way?
No, not really. I mean, I never watched comedy when I first started doing comedy, probably for the first 15 years. And I don't know why. I just didn't have a taste for it. It was almost as if, meaning not that I don't mind the language and all of that stuff, especially back then, that was just part of comedy.
Yeah.
But I never was comfortable watching comedy, probably for the first 15 years of my career.
Mm.
And I didn't understand why until after I got back and started watching comedy more. And the reason was I can see clearly that God wanted me to get my own voice in comedy. Because had I watched a bunch of other comedians, and there's some phenomenal comedians out there, both clean and dirty. If I had watched them, like, I would have been influenced by what it is they're doing, their style. But instead, I just didn't watch, and I created my own style, my own thought process. And now that I have that locked and I know what it is I want to do, I really enjoy watching the comedians a lot.
Yeah, that's great.
Brian Regan is hilarious. I think Ellen DeGeneres is funny. Like, there's a lot of really funny stand-ups out there.
For sure. So one of the focuses of this podcast is what we do every day to keep our eyes on Jesus in a world that's full of distractions and vying for our attention. And how do we keep our eyes on Jesus every day? And sometimes we'll miss it, but other days, you know, we need to make it intentional on how we stay focused on what we're supposed to be doing. So what have you found in your life that helps you stay focused on what God has for you and keeping focused on him every day? Is there any practices you've incorporated or any routines that you kind of do that kind of help with that?
Well, the first thing I do in the morning is I'm like knees before feet. So when I get out of bed, literally I'll go to my knees before I go to my feet, because my feet is about me. My knees is about him. So that's like a regular thing that I do.
Yeah.
The other thing is I always suggest to people to not have like a prayer closet. Like, listen, I was in the movie War Room. It's a great movie. It's awesome. That's right. And we do have a war room in our house where we go and pray.
Mm.
But what I recommend people do is have that for sure. But also, like, be very, very aware of the fact that if you have a certain place where you talk to God and you only talk and you mostly talk to him in that place alone.
Yeah.
When you leave the place, mentally, your brain is saying, OK, I'm done with that. Now let me go here.
Yeah.
And if you're not aware of it, you'll you'll lock your relationship with God down to that location,
That's
whether
good.
It be in the car or whatever the case is. So I try to have those conversations with him in multiple places and then throughout the day. Otherwise, it's easy to get locked into, okay, man, I got to go spend my morning, or even if it's a certain time, got to get my morning time with God. What about the afternoon or the eat? Like, how can you continue a conversation? Maybe even while you're talking to God and praying, saying, hey, God, when I get to work today at lunch, you think we could talk about whatever? Now you're kind of setting up a continued conversation versus this is what I do, and you're getting caught in the rut of doing the same thing the same way.
That's really good. And that's one of the things what the Bible talks about, praying without ceasing. It's taking him with you throughout the whole day. And then there's nothing wrong, like you're saying, in having a prayer closet or morning devotions. But at the same time, what happens when you're in the heat of the battle at work or at school or wherever it is, you know, where is God in that moment? And he's always with you, but it may not be as real to us if we don't keep our minds on him and our thoughts on him and just pray in the moment. Hey, God, I need you in this decision. I need you when I want to lash out in anger, God, come and fill me. And so that's a great reminder for everybody, just to take God with you throughout the day. So your new book, Funny How Life Works, and you have a podcast too, which is very funny. I love listening to that. And the book is really about stories of your life and funny how life works, literally in the title. And so you have obviously the comedy and sense of humor. It has changed your life and those around you, but why do you focus on people finding the funny in life, and especially coming out of a year like 2020? Why is it important for people to, you know, not be just casual with life, but also not take it so seriously to the point where we're, you know, in depression every day? As Christians, we're supposed to find the joy of the Lord. And so, like, what has been your message with people in your shows? Always point them to some kind of deeper truth. What would you say for people that just kind of is hard for them to find what's funny in life? Because I think God is a funny God. I mean, just look at what his creation and things he's done in the Bible. Like, he's got a sense of humor. And so why is it important for us to have one too?
So in chapter 22 of the book, there's a story that about some police officers breaking into my apartment after I had was working for 14 hours that day, wrongfully breaking into my apartment. And one of them put a gun to my head and put the hammer back. And the end of the story, I won't go into the details. People, you got, like, the book is, I'm really excited about how people respond to the book. But at the end of the story, after what happens, and I focus on that there's a woman who comes into my apartment who I don't know afterwards, and she's really hurt, and because the police had done some things to her as well. And she came in there and she was hurt. She had two kids. She spoke broken English. I didn't know anything about, I couldn't understand what she was saying, but I could tell she was hurt.
Yeah.
And when she came into my apartment while I'm sitting there really afraid because the police just left.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid and mad and angry. And she came in there with those two kids and she was crying. And immediately I felt compassion for her and I wanted to help her. So I did something and I helped her in that moment. I gave her some money. She gave me a hug. She took her two kids. She wiped her tears and she left, and I never saw her again. But what really the amazing thing that took place in that moment is even though I was super hurt, like I was very, 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 very hurt, afraid, angry. As soon as I started looking for someone else, as soon as I found someone else who I could help, my pain and my anger and all of those things started to quickly subside. So what I would say to people is, look for opportunities to help other people. This pandemic has really jacked a lot of people up.
Which
could be seen as really bad, but at the same time, it could be seen as really good as far as opportunities to help other people. So when I'm doing comedy, when I'm finding laughter, all I'm really doing is looking at life differently and then expressing that to people in a way that they can laugh. So you may not be a comedian, those who are listening to this, but you can make a choice to try to look at life differently, and you might find some other opportunities that can give you a chance to laugh or learn or listen more. So it's really about not getting caught in the same rut of what you always do, but kind of breaking that pattern to see what else is there. And one great way to break your pattern in the midst of this and what's going on is to find some comedy, because who's laughing in the midst of all of this? So if you go find some comedy, I got a bunch of videos on YouTube where there's a bunch of comedians just in general, like Tim Hawkins is doing some new stuff now. So just find some comedy in the middle. Instead of just sitting there and looking at what's all bad, just stop and say, you know what? I'm about to go laugh and have an attitude of laughter and then watch some clips. This book is really funny too. Like if you like to read or if you want the audio version of the book, whatever that might look like, go to funnyhowlifeworksbook.com and get the book. You can buy it anywhere. You go to Amazon, you go anywhere. But if you go to funnyhowlifeworksbook.com, you actually can get a signed copy of the book. So that's pretty cool. But laughter is hugely important. Jesus, I mean, God created laughter. I mean, like he created us and lungs and everything else that needs to go along with laughter. So he created it for us. So it's good.
Yeah, for sure. And you talk a lot about getting out of your comfort zone, and that's where growth comes from. And so how has God drawn you out of your comfort zone into intentionally seeking him into new experiences? So a part of discernment is to know, you know, is this experience actually God or is it just like my desires? And so how do you kind of process when something comes up, when you have to have discernment about a decision, if it's God or not? How do you, how, you know, what are some kind of like ways you go before God and like hear from him and have discernment about decisions, but also not get stuck, you know, to the point where like, I'm not going to do anything that's uncomfortable because that's where the growth comes from, like you said.
Yeah, I'm great with being uncomfortable. Like I recently I started wearing a lapel microphone. Which is, you know, a comedian always has a handheld, and I've had a handheld my whole life. But recently at a show, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go lapel. And the reason I did it is mainly because it's so uncomfortable. Like, I didn't know what to do with my hands. And I know that there's growth in the discomfort. As far as hearing God's voice and knowing it is him, there's three things you got to do to make sure that can confirm that you're hearing from God. So whatever the decision is, whatever the choice is, whatever you have to do, it'll always line up with these three things. Number one, it will line up with God's word. It will never go against his word. So if you feel like you're hearing a voice, you feel like it might be God, go to his word and make sure it lines up with his word. Yeah. Number two is it'll be confirmed by some other like-minded believers. Like other people will confirm this in a good way. You don't have to, you don't necessarily have to go to them and ask him, hey, what you think? You think I should date? You think I should go ahead and date Dwayne? Like you don't even have to ask him. Like it'll be confirmed in another way. Yeah. Number three, you'll have a peace about it. And when I say you'll have a peace about it, you'll feel settled. It doesn't mean you'll understand exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
So the best way that I find, instead of saying, if you got choice A and B, instead of saying, hey, God, what you want me to do?
Yeah.
Like you can do that if you want to. But if you have a sense that A is the way to go, a great way to position is, hey, God, I really feel like I'm supposed to do A. Is this the right move or not?
Yeah.
And then if you feel, and it could be a hard move, like you don't know how you're going to do it. You don't know how you're going to pull it off. It doesn't make sense. But if you pick a direction, it's sometimes easier to hear from God because you'll either have some, you'll be unsettled about it. Not, when I say unsettled, I don't mean like when God told us to move to Dallas, we didn't know any details. We only knew two humans who lived in Dallas. We didn't know any of the details. So don't get caught up in the details.
Yeah.
Feel how you feel in that moment. Like, man, I don't know what it looks like, but I do feel peace about it.
Yeah.
Versus the other one, if you pick B, you might know exactly what that looks like and you don't feel any peace. So the key is to not get the peace mixed up with knowing everything.
Yeah.
You're not going to know everything because you have to trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding.
That's good.
Those three things. If you do those three things, I think you'll be in a good position to move forward in what God's called you to.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know, there's a lot of times where it might be the quote, right decision to the world, but it's not the decision God's calling you to do. And that's where that peace comes from is like you're saying, it's not because it'll be easy or not because it even makes sense, but because the peace that passes all understanding from the Prince of Peace will come into your spirit and will give you that sense of, okay, this is where I'm supposed to go. And a lot of times too, we may have choice A and B, but then God brings out choice C. And you're like, where did that come from? And God's like, okay, you were limiting yourself to these two choices, but I have this really path for you. Or he might close both the doors on A and B. And you're like, why are the doors closed, God? And then God's like, well, look over here. This door is opening up for you. And so God does not work in the way, you know, our minds work because he's God. But at the same time, we have to kind of humble ourselves and think of like, okay, God, what are you showing me in this? Or, you know, I found in my life too, you might pick, you know, option A, and that's the choice God wants you to go down, but then it might slam shut later. But the process you took to learn and to grow in that decision can now help you in the next decision. And so it doesn't mean you're going to stay on path A forever. It just means for this season, that's where God wants you. It's whether, you know, maybe you're going to a church temporarily, or maybe in a job temporarily, or maybe, you know, serving in something, but there's a season for everything. And people get upset, and I get upset when a door closes on something I've been doing for 10 years. And I recently left a job that I was in for over 20 years. And it's like, I thought that's what I was going to do forever. But then God's like, well, because you're trusting me and because you're listening, I have something better for you.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. Yeah. Closing door A, a good example of closing door A, even though you went through door A, is like Abraham. His name starts with an A. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And door A was, I'm about to sacrifice my son.
Right.
And then when he got up there to do it, God was like, nope, closing the door. Don't want you to sacrifice him. So some of that stuff is just to check and see where you at on your obedience.
Yeah.
Like, are you really going to be obedient even though this thing doesn't make sense? I really, really believe that God gives us checkpoints. So a checkpoint is like, you know, if you ever play a video game, there's a certain level you get to. And then once you pass it, you don't have to go back
to the
initial level. So I feel like there's always some checkpoints. Not necessarily God is testing us with anything that's going to harm us, but no, I mean, not at all, actually, but a checkpoint, for example, could be something like, oh, you have a business opportunity, but that business opportunity is with someone that doesn't look like you.
Right.
And you're having a hard time. You're like, I don't know if I want to work with this guy. And God is saying, go.
Yeah.
And you're like, nope, I've never worked with a Spanish person before. I can't do it. Well, that's fine. You cannot do it, but you're not getting past that checkpoint. Sometimes a checkpoint will show up in regards to, you just got to do this little bitty thing that's not 100% true on your taxes. You're going to save so much money. In fact, you're going to use some of that money for the kingdom. Start doing all this rationalization or whatever.
Get 15%.
Absolutely. And that right there is a checkpoint where God sees that. And he's like, oh, you're not ready yet. Stay where you are in the circle you're in. And then another checkpoint will come up. And if you get past that thing, and that means you're ready for real treasure. Because when God says, like, if I can trust you with little, now I know I can trust you with even more. Mm-hmm. The little sometimes is money, and it could be $1 billion. But the more is people. If God can trust you with money, then the next level is maybe I can trust you with some people.
Yeah, that's really good. And it might be that we restart, and discernment is not that we're going to get every decision right, but it's that we're going to learn in the process. I call discernment a spiritual muscle that you grow over time. And it's through not only good decisions, but also bad decisions that we grow that muscle. And if we make a bad decision, then we don't keep making that same decision over and over, but we learn from it, restart, like you're saying, and move forward with that new knowledge that we have. And this is important too.
Where's the decision muscle located?
It's somewhere.
What does it look like?
Yeah.
Oh, it's on the back of your neck, maybe.
Prefrontal cortex.
Well, that'll be weird if it gets big. Because then you're like, man, that dude got a big decision muscle. How does he wear a hat?
Okay, yeah, no. It's a sign of sign of humility if you have a big head. So.
Yeah, and you know, I've got extraordinary humility.
Yeah, we established that at the beginning.
We did. Yeah.
This is one of the last questions. Is you talk about, you know, you say the
you
fast
say one
track.
Of the last questions.
Like, yeah, one, you, of the one of them. This is a Pentecostal 5 minutes. It might be
50. Last and one of the last.
It's a whole string of last.
We'll all of them are one of the last. If you think about, like, all of the questions are one of the last questions, right?
Yeah, it's like a pastor saying, you know, I got 5 minutes left, but then it's actually 20. So,
yeah, that does happen. I've been there before.
So if it goes too long, just hit the end button, and then we'll know you're done.
Oh. Well, I'm about to find this. Right. Yeah, go ahead.
You say that the fast track is really the best track, and we need to be like doctors and have patience. So let that sink in for people that aren't catching that.
Ooh, that is dope.
That's what you said. And so your gifting is a starting point, but needs to be developed and worked on over time. And you know, a lot of times people think that I have this gift, I'm going to go do all these things right now. But and a lot of times we want the position without the path to get there. You know, I want to be a comedian. I want to be a pastor. I want to be all these things, but not realizing the journey it takes to get there. And fast track is actually dangerous. And you see a lot of people that are fast track to now social media celebrities and all this stuff online, you know, 16-year-old kids that have millions of followers on TikTok, and God bless them. But it's the same thing. Like, what was their journey to get there? Like, just turning on a camera and saying a couple of funny things. And so in our life, no matter where we're at, we have to be, you know, patient on God and let him develop us over time without looking at other people's journeys and wanting to have that immediately. What have you found with in your life about, you know, being patient on God and letting him work on you through processes?
Oh, nothing.
Nothing. Okay. I guess we're done.
Yeah, we're probably done here. I feel like I, what one thing's God has shown me is to, is, and I do this, is to think about what I'm thinking about. You know what I mean? When I think about what I'm thinking about, I have to be patient because I can't be really operating and running around if I'm thinking about what I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. Like the Bible says to guard your heart and your mind. Like I'm constantly thinking, what am I thinking? So if I'm in an autograph line, I do it a lot in an autograph line. And I'll sign somebody's merch or the book or whatever. And then this lady will start telling me about the new sweater she bought for her dog. And I am done. Like I'm done. I'm 3 minutes in. I'm done. I don't want to hear about the sweater anymore. But I realize that I'm done. And I'm saying to myself, okay, God, is there anything I can give to her or anything I'm supposed to receive from her? Mm. So instead of just saying I'm done and moving on, I start thinking about what I'm thinking about. And it allows me to zoom back in on this lady and say to her, I don't care about your dog. No, I'm just saying. And just say to her, thank you so much for that information. Hug out and then move on. Or if God is saying there's something I want for you here, there's something you have for her, I'll stop talking about the dog. I'll be like, wait a minute. I know that the school, the dog got the sweater. Tell me about your closest relationship. Because she's only talking about the dog because she's avoiding something else maybe. And I didn't know that. But when I start thinking about what I'm thinking about, I'm like, okay, God. And then I can hear this, and then I'll say, hey, what is it we should pray about? Like, yeah. You'll never see me again, probably. So what? Let's go deep as we can, right. And let's jump in right now. Like I can do that in a moment. So it's important that people be patient enough, and God will teach us patience through a bunch of avenues. But if you just make the choice, wait a minute, God, I'm just going to be patient. I'm going to think about what I'm thinking about. You could actually skip ahead. Otherwise, you'll find yourself in some situations that'll continue to test your patience. And when you say test your patience, think about it. If something is testing your patience, mm-hmm. That means your patients need to get past another checkpoint, right? So more opportunities for you to be impatient are going to show up until you can pass that checkpoint to get where you're supposed to be. And a key, thank you, a fast route to get there is to think about what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
Craig Rochelle wrote a great book to cover some of this as well called Thinking Something, whatever the book is. It's awesome. I read it twice.
Yeah.
Oh, think about your master, your mind. Anyways, Craig Rochelle, look it up.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Yeah, whenever people ask me for autographs, I just give them a $100 bill because I know that that's going to make the most impact because money talks. And
there you go.
So,
yeah, let me get a couple. Oh, I want like 700.
Actually, no one asked me for autographs, so now everyone will. They're like, all right, I want to get that $100 bill.
That's awesome.
So cool. So, as we wrap up, let people know where they can find you. And
You can find me on this podcast right here. Yeah, for sure. But also, you can for sure find me on, we have a podcast called Funny How Life Works.
Yeah.
So by all means, all we do is we laugh. I mean, we laugh a lot on the podcast. Yep. And then there's always something a little more. The reason we call it Funny How Life Works is because we use funny to show people how life works. Same as the book. And if they want a signed copy of the book, the only way to get a signed copy is to go to funnyhowlifeworksbook.com and we'll actually send you a signed copy of the book.
Is it a stamp signature or your actual signature?
Nope. I actually signed a case yesterday just so we could stay ahead. So I'm actually signing it with a silver Sharpie because it's a black cover on a book.
Okay.
So super excited. If people want it, they should go ahead and get it for sure. Because I think, and you can read the stories in the book. You can read it to your kids.
Yeah.
Like, and it has some really good. So we don't just, we did the stories, we told them, but then we also put some application in there too. So you're laughing, you're learning, and then suddenly like, oh, snap. Well, I could do this tomorrow and it'll help you probably get past some of those checkpoints that people have in their life. So,
yeah. And you will read the book to us on Audible, which is like a bedtime story for me. So your voice just got me to sleep.
Got a little weird just now. Got a little weird.
What's the last question? This is actually the last question. So what is the, as you talk about, you know, jokes in the Christian church, I'm curious, have you ever had a Christian come up and complain? What has been the biggest complaint you got about maybe church comedy?
You know, what's funny is I don't really get a lot of complaints from people. Here's what I do on purpose, right? Like I will, I can have a, I have a sense where there might be some Pharisees sitting up front or some Sadducees up front.
Yeah.
And what I'll do is I'll go up there immediately and do one of my edgier jokes.
Yeah.
Because what this does is some people feel like you shouldn't laugh at church.
Yeah.
My response to that is always, what good father doesn't want to hear his children's laughter in his house, right?
Right.
So I'll immediately do a more, what some people would refer to as an edgier joke. So when they're sitting there with their arms folded, then I do an even edgier joke and their arms get super tight. So now what I do is I confirm them in what they were thinking.
Yeah.
Like I confirm them. And then somewhere in there, I'll share a story, like the story of me going to a abused children's facility and taking comedy there in Montrose, Colorado. There's a little boy there who was being abused by his mom, and they come to my comedy show, or I go to them, to the Dolphin House, and I do a comedy show for him. And this little boy is so afraid of his mom. Everywhere he goes, he wears a Spider-Man costume. Like, he won't take it off.
Mm.
And he's at my show, and he's sitting on his grandmother's lap, and he's afraid, and we start laughing and doing comedy. And then 20 minutes into it, you hear a voice, and the voice says, "My name is Ronan." Mm. This little boy pulls off his mask, introduces himself to me. Wow. By the end of the comedy show, we're dancing together on stage. And all of this happened because God gave me this gift of comedy. And now I can show up to these places and help these people. So yeah. When the Sadducees are sitting up front and they see that and their arms are all tight, now they're just done. They're just bawling and all out because they realize they had God in a box.
Yeah.
Because if God gave me this talent, I'm going to use it the way he told me to, for the people he told me to, and for the people that the Pharisees may not think I should go to. But use it any way I can. So I actually kind of enjoy when that happens because you could just see them done. And they'll walk up to me in the autograph line and be like, this one lady was crying. She was done. She was like, I can't believe I had the Lord in a box. I was like, yeah, well, cool. And I hug out and we pray. It's always really good. But that's the type of moves I like to do, especially with this gift of comedy. And it's not just the comedy. I look at the world differently. So comedy creates a revelation, and the results are laughter.
Yeah.
Well, God has shown me how to do the same thing even without the comedy aspect. Mm. I can cause people to think differently, and then the results can be revelation as well. So
yeah.
I'm excited about what I get to do. And we do it in the book. We do it on my videos on YouTube. So I'm Michael J.R. Comedy on all platforms. But get the book and the proceeds from the book, because there's so much stuff going on in the world. If you get the book, Funny How Life Works, the proceeds are actually going to a black family in America. So
that's awesome.
Important.
Hey,
yeah,
it's your family, right?
Yes, it is. That's true.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on. I'll put all that in the show notes. Get the book, Funny How Life Works. Thank you so much for coming on, Michael, and God bless you and your family.
Dude, you're awesome, man. Thanks a lot, bro.
That's going to do it for today. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. It was a fun one for me, and I really hope that you get Michael's book, Funny How Life Works. I think you'll really enjoy it, and you can find a link to that in the show notes. Well, I have another awesome interview for you next week with Dr. Gary Chapman. You know him from the 5 Love Languages book, and he has a new book called Life Lessons and Love Languages. We're going to talk about that. Make sure you subscribe, let a friend know about this podcast, and leave me a 5-star review if you enjoyed this content. And I will see you next week. Until then, go with God, grow in discernment, and keep your eyes on Jesus.
Thank you for listening to the Everyday Discernment Podcast. For more information on discerning dad, go to discerning-dad.com. Be sure to follow on all the social media platforms. Just search for Discerning Dad. Please share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review on whichever platform you listen. Feel free to send any comments, suggestions, questions, or prayer requests at discerningdad@outlook.com. Until next time. Keep fighting the good fight.